Yeah. Come on. My people in the A, yeah, you gotta wake up. The people in my city, come on, let's wake up. Said my people around the world, yeah, we gotta wake up. Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. We gotta wake up.
Wake up, wake up, wake up. Wake yeah, up now. Yeah. Wake up.
Let's go.
Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more backwards thinking. Time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Yeah.
Wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe they will listen to what you have to say.
Cause
they're the ones who's coming up, the world is in their hands. And we teach the children, teach them the very best you can.
Now I've been trying to keep my cool and not this way to over-radical. Cut the sack, act like I woke up out sabbatical. Now what you need, another Moses, a bed of roses. We all here talking about the same thing, we know the motives. I won't expose this again, so you know this. This ain't no hocus pocus, then again, well you know it is. Just keep your focus and your eyes wide open. Your third one, two, check, check, one, two.
Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer, catch all the hell. But they don't have so very long before the judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away?
Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we can do it as long as we lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time.
Yo, get up, start your day off like a winner. Everyone successful starts off a beginner. If you wanna make it happen, your passion has got to lift up. Don't give up, always look for the bigger picture.
Yeah.
You got this, the only one stopping you is your conscience. Add action, subtraction is not an option.
No.
I know it ain't easy, believe me, it's all in God's hands. He'll take care of us, there is a miracle arising.
The world won't get much better.
Get no better.
If we just let it be, let it be. The world won't get much better. We gotta change, yeah.
Change it, yeah.
The world won't get better.
Get no better.
In the mirror, can't get no clearer, so you can't let them scare you. So you gotta be prepared at all times, think with reason. You can't be logical for a season. Anything you put your mind to, be sure to conquer. Stand straight, tighten your belt, sun his feet proper. Let the devil know he won't win. You God's favorite. We gotta shape the paradigm, then we can make it. Yeah.
Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more backwards thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from how it used to be. There is so much hatred, war and poverty.
Yeah. Okay, my people couldn't say it any clearer. No time for those excuses, we should all start in the mirror on the wall. Who's the fairest of them all? When minorities are not being treated fairly at all, I'm appalled when I call my fellow brethren, ask him how we been. He said his son was pulled over by the popo again. I pray these things will end the discrimination. We shouldn't be profiled because of the color of our skin.
All I really wanna know is, can we all get along? If you wanna feel the love, you gotta wake up.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping.
Ooh,
wake up, ooh. Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping.
Everybody,
wake up, everybody, no more sleeping.
Change.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping.
No more sleeping.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping. Go-poo. Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping.
Wake up, everybody.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping.
Yeah, yeah.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping.
No more sleeping.
Wake up, everybody.
Why don't you?
Why don't you wake up, everybody? everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Wake up, everybody.
Everybody.
Gotta get on up.
Specific line of spices that can really fit your diabetic lifestyle. Our spice flavors are a game changer. We have created unique blends of all-purpose seasonings that are salt-free, gluten-free, with no additives and preservatives, great for chronic conditions like high blood pressure, obesity, and heart disease. These spices contain antiviral, antibacterial, antifungal properties, and improve digestive function and metabolism. Choose diabetic cuisine spices for your family to feel more safe, confident, and support healthy aging.
And welcome back to another exciting episode of the Your Best Lifestyles Health and Wellness Podcast. I am your host, Terrence Hutchinson, right here at the O. Robertson Public Relations and Media Group Studios in Atlanta, Georgia. Hope you guys are doing well. Happy Tuesday afternoon, evening, I should say. It's cold and rainy. As you know, if you're in the ATL right now, you already know it's cold and rainy. Lately, we've been having some real unpredictable weather. First is 70 degrees, and then it'll get down to 30, and it'll jump back up to 70 and get back down to freeze warnings. So today is just one of those days, man, where we're just trying to figure it out, but we're going with the flow right now. But I hope you guys are doing well. You know how I like to do. I like to try to encourage everybody to take great care of themselves. You know, it's so important, especially going into this particular era of our lives. You know, we're getting older now, many of us, and it's imperative that we focus on our overall health and well-being, whether it's psychological, spiritual, emotional, environmental, occupational, physical. You know, all these things play a huge part in our overall well-being. So many people are struggling right now in their health, and it's from every sector of it. You know, I work with a lot of people who are middle age, and they're recovering from a stroke, they're recovering from heart disease, arthritis, you know, just so many chronic conditions that people are going through right now that's really costing them hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical expenses. And also, you know, they're bedridden, their clothes are shut in. And sometimes it really hurts me to see people suffering like that, being in pain, being in the hospitals, stuck in the house. You know, it bothers me. So I just want to keep encouraging everybody to make sure that you're taking care of yourself, man. You're really eating right, the best you can, because I know it can be very challenging to get the right foods and the right nutrition in your body. Exercising, controlling your stress, you're meditating, you're praying, you're really getting the proper sleep, and you're staying hydrated. Like, these things play an important part, man. So if you're in your 40s, 50s, 60s, and you're feeling great, no pain in your body, you have great cognitive function, cognitive awareness, great flexibility and mobility, and actual functionality, pat yourself on the back, you know, because this is huge, man. And if you're not, then, you know, you have to make some adjustments, okay? It's so important, because you want to make sure that you remain to be an asset to everyone around you, family members, friends, co-workers, employees, whatever you do, or wherever you are, whoever you're around. So it's better to be an asset than a liability. So when your health fails, everything around you fails, depending on your situation. But things slows down, right? Because you're not thinking about work, you're not thinking about making money, you're not thinking about none of those things until you start to feel better. So we just want to make sure that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, okay? Getting enough sleep is important. drinking that water, staying away from the super processed foods, from the fast foods, controlling your stress, you know, you just got to do it, man. So, and I understand, before I bring on my guests, I understand in some areas people are dealing with financial issues. So getting healthy or hiring a health professional to help them stay healthy is very hard. And then some areas and environments have a lot of food deserts, so they may not be able to purchase a lot of the fresh produce that their body needs, right, for optimal health. And I understand that too. And some people are on fixed income and they have to focus on, should I get my medicine for the month or should I go buy fruits and vegetables? And this is a huge problem that I've been seeing for a while. And it's just heartbreaking, man, you know. But I'm gonna tell you this, get your medicine by all means. But if you're not on medicine and you're still complaining about the prices of fresh produce, think about the value versus the cost. Okay, think about that, because you're worrying about the cost, but you need to think about the overall value of why you should be spending the money to eat properly. Okay, because the overall long-term value of it is less doctor's visits, a healthier lifestyle, right? More vitality, more energy, better cognitive health. Think about those things. So if you have to, you know, spend $3.99 on $4.99 on extra fruits and vegetables or whatnot, and then make the investment. And think about where you need to cut corners from. If it comes down from partying every weekend or drinking that bottle of wine every night, you getting your hair done, getting your nails done twice a week or whatever, see what areas that you can cut back on, okay? So I just wanted to say that. And then also, everybody, if you're not knowing, you know, I'm going to share this, you know, there's a lot going on in the world right now in the news, and, you know, the big thing that's going on outside the presidency and all those different things like that is Puff Daddy, you know. And it's, if you already know, the Homeland Security and everything, they raided his home, homes in California and Miami on yesterday. So there's a lot going on there. It'd be interesting to see how things unfold. But, you know, keep your head up, man. You know, hopefully this too shall pass. But it's very interesting. But I just want to say that, man. So my prayers go out to the Combs family as well. I wasn't there. I can't judge nobody. So anyway, man, I appreciate you guys. But I'm going to introduce my guest. I'm going to read a little bit about him, and then I'm going to bring him on. My next guest is coming from Colorado right now. He's up in the mountains, and his name is Mr. Keith Cooper. Keith Cooper served as a president and CEO of OneCore Consulting, LLC. OCC specializes in providing structured support to startup and small aerospace businesses in the U.S. Commercial and government market space. Prior to OneCore Consulting, Keith serves in three top defense companies in numerous roles from senior manager to senior vice president. During this time, Keith was interviewed by numerous worldwide publications on the pilot shortage, wrote articles on pilot training, and spoke on veterans panels to corporations supporting wounded warriors and veteran issues. Awesome. Before Keith entered the corporate world, he served in the military. Thank you for your service. Retiring as a colonel following his tour in Iraq, OIF-2. He is a graduate of the Army's Airborne and Ranger Schools. His military decorations and awards include the Distinguished Service Medal, the Bronze Star, and three-time recipient of the Legion of Merit. Keith is an avid pilot with an airline transport license. He is an author, and he is an active volunteer who has served with Christian Family Ministries in Haiti. Oh, we got to talk about Haiti, too. St. Bernard Project project in the Southern U.S. and Angel Flight. Midwest personality flying cancer patients to and from treatment. A native of Alaska, Keith holds an undergraduate degree in engineering from West Point and Master's of Science in Mathematics from the Colorado School of Mines and a Master's of Business Administration and a Master's in National Security Strategy. Welcome to the show, Mr. Keith Wallace. How you doing today, King?
Hey, Terrence, thanks. And let me just say that introduction you talked about on health was probably the best I've heard. I've been interviewed a lot of times, and the emphasis you put on those important factors, especially for members of our community, I just got to tell you, I took notes. I mean, it was phenomenal. It was right. It was the right focus. And thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity just connecting with you, man, because you are a phenomenal person. First of all, thank you for your service to the country and all the things that you're doing right now, you know, all the things you have been doing. And it's a pleasure to have you on, man. You know, and when we're talking about, you know, health and wellness, you being a military guy, you know how important it is still, you know, to take very, very care of yourself, you know. And on a green screen in the back room, in the green room, we was talking about, you know, you was doing a lot of skiing before you came on, you know, and I was like, man, you know, that's a total body workout, man.
It is. And unfortunately, even for me, you don't realize how important health is if something goes wrong with your health. And you and I know people who had that indicator, and I was lucky enough to have that when I was about 42, where the doctor gave me a choice of changing my diet or, you know, leaving early, basically. And so I was lucky to get that indicator, and I took the doctor's advice, and that was one of the things that happened to me. And I've been 20 years since, and I've tried to eat healthy like you talked about.
Right.
Shopping for the right fruits and vegetables and making sacrifices not to buy certain things to be able to eat certain foods. And it's paid off. But you're right. I mean, sometimes we got to get that knock on the door. Someone else giving us that choice, and when we take it.
It's unfortunate that I got a knock on the door like 11 years ago with type 2 diabetes. And that was a wake up call for me because, you know, I almost killed myself with it. So, but right now, there's so many people that are struggling with all types of health issues, and, you know, all cultures and nationalities and backgrounds. It's just like, man, when I consult with individuals and I hear the stories, I'm like, man, you know, it just made me realize how great that I'm doing or how far I've come, you know, in my overall health and well-being. So let's talk about you. You know, you're doing aerospace businesses right now for the government and the private sector. Talk a little bit more about that and how'd you get started.
Well, I started the company focused on primarily the private sector, using the you know, companies that work with me to get into government contracts and those things. But let me back up a little bit and talk about how I got started. I got started because part of my 26 year career in the Army, I had four tours in the Pentagon, and one of those tours in the Pentagon was doing contracts. Military contracts working for the government. So I got to see kind of the different companies coming in, and there's this missing link of innovation, of entrepreneurship coming in. So I carried that all the way through, including the time when I was in Iraq. And the government actually had a really quick innovation program for entrepreneurs where they brought a lot of equipment in that we were able to use, and it saved soldiers' lives. So fast forward that all the way through the time I was in corporate America, working for Fortune 100 and 500 companies. At the end of the day, I've always wanted to help out the person at the kitchen table who had the easel, person who had the idea, the small business there. And so that's what I do. I work with small businesses, entrepreneurs, to enable them to get with the large commercial or the medium to large companies. But basically, I work with the small and entrepreneurs to get them noticed in the government sector and the private sector, to get them over that hill, that hump they need so much help with. Because you know what? Our country needs that idea, that entrepreneurship, that glow. I mean, every great idea started in someone's kitchen table or garage. Everyone did. And so I like working with those companies to get their ideas out of that garage, off that kitchen table, into the eyes of someone who can make a difference.
Yeah, how challenging is it for an entrepreneur to get government contracts?
It's very challenging, and typically you have to go through steps. You have to find a way to be known. You have to find a company that's already in that has a contract, and sub to that contract typically is what I find the best way to do it. So you're not going right to the government. You're going to those who are already in the government. No different than many businesses. You know somebody that knows somebody, right? I mean, that's
right, right.
And it works the same thing in government contracts. So you prove yourself with that subcontractor. And then after that, once you're in, it's a wonderful place to be. But you're right. It is hard. And to get that initial handshake, to get that initial interview, is no different than getting a job. You just have to be persistent, and you got to have a passion for what you believe in. And that's what's great about working with these entrepreneurs, because every single person believes in what they're doing. I mean, they quit their six-figure jobs and some more to sacrifice and work for something they really believe in. So you can't help but love them all. I mean, they're wonderful.
Right, right, right. Now, just to say an entrepreneur gets awarded a bid, how long does certain awards last with the contracts or with the government? 3 to 5 years, a little longer?
Yeah, 3 to 5 years. There's what's called a base and option year period, right? So you may have a base of 1 year, and in 4 or 5 option years, you may have a base of 3 years. It's all spelled out pretty clear. But going back to the award and execution, you may get an award in June and have to execute in October, meaning there's a transition period too. So the good thing about the government is they spell everything out very well. They really do. And before you even enter and wanting to bid a contract with a small or an entrepreneur, you know the rules, you know the timeline, you know the point of contact. They're very, very good about being fair, open, answering questions, and really encouraging. The government actually has two groups, the innovation unit out of Crystal City, which really is free to entrepreneurs to be a part of, and they want your ideas for special defense. And of course, the cyber situation we all face right now.
Yeah. So what do you think about the cyber situation we're facing right now? There's a lot going on, especially in this AI community right now. What are your thoughts on AI in general?
Well, I'll take the first point on cyber. I think that cyber is going to be the next war. I mean, I think it's going on right now. It's a quiet war. And I think they're doing a good job of spelling out what we're facing. I think people don't understand how severe the threat is. And one thing I really enjoy about working with the government is they put mandates on contractors to be, and I'll use the term cyber ready. They have different levels of 1, 2, et cetera. So before you do business, you have to make sure your computing network is secure. You have closed networks. They're all different rules. So that's the first part, is that we all need to take it seriously. Our information that we have, especially dealing with the government, can't be compromised. And truthfully, like you, and I'm sure many other your viewers, I've had credit cards compromised. I've had other things, social media's taken a lot, and things like that, in these websites. We all have to be careful. Now, going back to the AI part that you talked about, AI is not going away. And we have to be very careful, and I'll be very short on this, that we control AI and not let AI control us. There's a lot of good AI out there. There's a lot of potential bad AI out there. And the typical process of AI, which is relearning and being able to get better with machines. And truthfully, it will take some jobs out of the market, jobs we do. And before that happens, we have to say to ourselves, how are we going to make sure the people who lose those jobs are trained to do other jobs, not just become payroll deductions off big corporations? That can't happen. And I think that corporations have a responsibility. The government has a responsibility to make sure that when we incorporate some of this technology, we look at the people who've been there for 10, 20 years, giving their heart and soul, missing soccer games, missing basketball games, to be able to make companies and businesses profitable. What are we going to do? And that's our responsibility.
Yeah, it's already being done right now in certain mega stores and not, restaurants, and representatives are saying, hey, with AI or bots, it's less call outs, it's nobody's getting sick, less payroll. So they're making adjustments not right now as we speak. So you're right. You know, a lot of people have to re-educate themselves or find new skills to really keep themselves compatible in the job market. But what if you, like you said, people are 20 years into a job and all of a sudden they get replaced by a computer or a bot? What do you say to those individuals who may be in their 50s and, you know, they got kids in college, they got mortgage, you know what I'm saying? It seems like their world can be crumbling around. What would you say to that?
Well, going back to my point, I think that employer, if you're going to put a kiosk in the place and replace a person, then what else are you doing to better your company and improve that company that person can make a difference in? If right. you're not looking ahead and being able to say, I'm going to have, you know, 10 less cashiers, that's 10 people I can now use in the corporate headquarters. You know, if you're not thinking like that, then right. you need business. And oh, by the way, some of these kiosks and self-serves are being replaced with cashiers because people are getting tired of scanning their vegetables and, you know, punching in. I mean, really, you sit there and you're like, potato, I got to look at what kind. Is it organic? Is it bunch? I mean,
right.
There's like 17 different types of apples, you know?
Right.
You know? So people are getting a little frustrated, and I think they're going to start voting with their feet. The same thing in a restaurant. When you walk in and you can go ahead and sit at a table and put this iPad in front of you, you know, you don't have to go there. You know, that's your choice. You know, yeah. I like service. I pay for service. And right. I think people are going to understand that sooner or later.
Right, exactly. Now, when we talk about aerospace, which sector is better for you where you feel more excited, government or private sector?
Well, and that's a great question. I'm actually in both. I've been in the government sector. I've been in the private sector. The government sector is a very linear, predictable growth. Okay, it's going to grow at 6 to 8%, you know, if that fast, maybe 3 to 4% across the board. It's going to be your steady state when you're looking. The private sector is going to follow, you know, kind of a roller coaster up and down. All right. And so what I try to tell companies is get your credentials in both, because when one goes bad, you want the stability of the other and vice versa. And what I'm talking about is, you know, politically, and I won't go into the different political parts going on right now, but there's all right. these government shutdowns. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, when there's a government shutdown, if you're in a government sector with new business, you don't get paid. If you have existing business, you get a certain percentage, like 80-85. So you want that private sector, Terrence, to offset that curve. And that's what I school new business on. Don't just be in one sector. Have your, you know, your leg in both sectors so you can weather the storms that are going out. The private's much more lucrative. Private commercial, absolutely, much more lucrative. But also there are some dry times in that, like your desert times you talked about in the supermarket. Right. A lot of desert goes on in the private sector too. And that's why I try to get businesses that can go to both, get credentialed in both. So when one starts looking bad, they can go to the other.
Right. That's excellent, man. You know, so is it hard for entrepreneurs to, you know, maintain their stress levels when it comes down to winning government contracts? If you don't have the right person like you in place, it can be very stressful trying to navigate the paperwork.
Well, even with me in place, it can be very stressful. And the answer to your question is, it's very stressful. But what I try to school the teams that comes I work with is have several opportunities out. You're not going to win every opportunity. I mean, if you win 50% of your opportunities, you're doing great. Most people right. are 30%. So you don't put all your eggs in one basket on one contract, which goes back to make sure you're diversified in the government sector. Mm-hmm. And the private sector, because, you know, someone else is going to have a different idea and you know, you got to move on. So, but going back to the stress and going back to your opening, I mean, really talking about that, you know, when you talked about the value and the cost, it's a job. Okay. It's a job. And you don't want to sacrifice that job for your health. You want to make sure you put everything you can into it. But at the end of the day, the most important thing to do is kiss your kids and, you know, tell your partner you love them. And get excited about the loss of a contract. That's the most important thing. So you want to make sure you have some type of foundational stability.
Yeah. Now, when it comes down to entrepreneurs and government contracts, do you have to have both your personal Social Security number and your EIN number, or just an EIN number when you're doing a government contract?
You give your EIN number out. I mean, when you're applying there and ask for EIN, you've got to be certified. There's a whole network. And I don't do the certification. There are companies out there that walk everybody through certification. So you're in the SAM database and you're registered and your cage codes and, you know, all the different technical things.
Yeah.
There are probably 15 companies out there that can do it for you, you know, in a matter of months. You send in all your affidavits for things you don't, you know, have done. You send in your financial statements. You do all that stuff. And if you're doing the veterans contracts, it's a little bit different because you have to show your veterans records of, you know, you've been a veteran or you're disabled or whatever. And there's a myriad of different categories. And that's why these businesses out there can help you get certified. Most of the folks that I help are already certified. They're already
Yeah.
They have EIN, they've got the SAM code, they got the DBA, they got everything else there. And that's when I take over. If they don't have it, I direct them to who can do it pretty quick for them. But all that is you know, spelled out for that person before they even apply. So you know exactly what you have to do.
Right. I remember during COVID when everything was shut down and the government contractors came across my desk. I said, man, that'd be something that I can look into. And I had the cage number, you know, I had everything going. I was in sams.gov and it was so mind-boggling. It was painful for me, man, because they keep denying me because they said that my EIN number was wrong. I said, this is the number, you know, it doesn't match. It doesn't match. And it's driving me crazy, Keith. And I got so upset, I just left it alone. After three times, I'm on the phone with Sam's. I'm talking to him. I said, this is the number. I'm reading it slowly. And it was like, it don't match. It don't match. And that's what my last question as far as the EIN and the Social Security, because, you know, I tried both of those numbers and they're still saying that it was an error. And I just left it alone. And as soon as you start talking about government contractors, all those things started popping back up in my head. That's why I asked you about the stress. Because I was stressing out, man.
Terrence, every year you get recertified in SAM. And so I'm getting recertified now because even though I consult, I'm still able to win contracts. And they still have my address wrong. It's been 6 years. I mean, I haven't moved, right?
Right.
I have my address wrong, so I know what you're saying. And you just got to keep trying. But you're right. It is stressful. Yeah. You're right.
It was so frustrating for me. And here we are, 2024. I never revisited. I never even thought about it until now.
Right.
You know, so I know going back in, I'm going to have to, you know, set everything back up again. That's
well,
crazy.
There are people out there that can help you, and I'm getting help from a company that does it pretty well. And it is, I mean, truthfully, when have you ever heard from anybody working with the government's easy? I mean, it's not something that you say in the same sentence. It is getting better. As a veteran, I will tell you that the VA system has improved tremendously over the last 10 years. It's still got some issues, but it is the long, slow process, whether it's state, whether it's federal, that you have to go through.
Okay, right, and right.
You're right. It's stressful.
Yeah, even also, I was, you know, do county bids.
Yeah.
Your local bids, like you said, state and then federal. But also, I was like, man, there's a lot of things that I can look into with this product. And it was so frustrating to me. And I didn't have, you know, I was trying to figure all of it by myself going through.
That's why you need help.
Yeah. Yeah, you need help. Yeah.
There's a lot of opportunity out there. You need help. Yeah.
Right, right, right. And I said, man, I'm just gonna leave it alone. I'm just gonna leave it alone. So you've been a pilot, right, for a long time.
I have. I learned to fly at a very young age and kept it up. I always had a dream of being in the military as a pilot, but my eyes were not that good when I was in high school. They still aren't that good. So they have a vision standard, which is fair, and I didn't meet the vision standard. So I basically, you know, fly my own.
Right. Okay. Do it yourself. And you've written numerous articles on the pilot shortage and all these different things like that. Now, in your experience right now, do you feel that we have a lot of shortages of pilots right now?
We absolutely do. I was just on a podcast yesterday. Some people who are your listeners may be aspiring pilots, and I would encourage them to not give up. The demand for pilots after COVID was astronomical. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The demand for pilot was, some airlines were thinking about hiring $2,000 or $3,000 a year, which is unheard of. Mm-hmm. But Terrence, we've got to go back to the day when you and I were a little bit younger and talk about what the norm is. It's almost like talking to some friends of yours about interest rates, right? You know, you hear it out 5 or 6%. People are getting excited. Well, the first house I bought, I financed at 11%. The first car I bought was 10%, you know? Mm-hmm. And so you've got to kind of look across the spectrum of things.
Right.
And pilot airlines are hiring right now about half the pilots they hired in 2020, 2021, when that peak was going up.
Right.
But if you look back in the 90s, airlines were hiring about 240 pilots a year. Now they're hiring about 1,100 pilots a year. The peak of 2021, there were about 2,000. So it has gone down. And that's kind of my point. It has gone down. Some companies like Southwest have actually stopped hiring for the year. And I think United's going to slow down. But to your listeners who want to be pilots, don't give up. I mean, it's a wonderful career. It's a phenomenal career. You meet some wonderful people. If you pass the medical qualifications, which goes to your opening as far as staying healthy, you know, it's a great place to be. It's a wonderful place to meet people, grow yourself, etc. So my advice is it may pick up a little bit more, it may not, but still, even today in 2024, with what we see for the hiring, it's still a heck of a lot better than it was back in the late 90s and early 2000s. So yeah, there's still a demand.
Yeah, and you know, because I was thinking about the pilot strike, I think that was a couple of years ago, you know, they was out there. And I think I didn't know the real reason why they were striking, but I don't know the full reason. I know they feel like they was overworked. So most pilots were tired. They need to hire more people. Right. And it's a very dangerous job. You know, the pilot is extremely fatigued, you know, and you're flying back and forth, different time zones, barometric pressures, those natures. It can really be draining, hormonal changes. You know, all type of stuff going on. So it's like, it's funny because every time I take a flight and, you know, the pilots are there, you know, or the stewardess, I'm like, how y'all doing? You know, you good? You're good. How you feeling?
What, a candy bar?
Yeah. You know, I'm checking the temperature.
Checking it out.
Because, you know, if you're tired, it's just like, you're on the front line in the medical field, you know, and you go in and the doctor or the nurse is tired, they're overwhelmed, and you might get a bad diagnosis. You never know, you know, it could be a mistake. So anytime I feel like I put my life in somebody's hands, I'm making sure that I'm asking questions. How are you today? If they're smiling, they're vibrant and they're happy and smiling. I mean, it don't really mean a whole lot, you know, but that makes me feel comfortable. You know what I'm saying? Especially me getting up 30,000 or more feet in the air, you know, on a plane. It's like, y'all good? How you feeling? You know, it's, you know, but I only fly. I should not say that. I was about to say, I only fly one airline because I'm super comfortable. Anybody else, I'm like, nah, book it over here because I'm comfortable over here. I can watch a movie over here and fall asleep and be there, you know, going to LA or whatever like that. You know, I'm good. So let's talk about the book. Tell everybody what the book is about. How'd you get the concept? How'd you get started and why?
Well, we're jumping over to a different part, I think, which is great. You know, I start off as a military person, and then I go into corporate world, and then I write articles on flying. And now the book kind of is almost about your opening on mental health, right? So how did that happen, right? This guy who's doing all this. And I started because it was COVID, right? It was COVID and we're all sitting there not able to go anywhere. And all of us were isolated away from friends and loved ones.
Right.
And so there's so many stories I wanted to tell at the time I was going through a lot of different stressful things, like you, like everybody else, like your viewers, right? You're thinking about your health, think about your parents' health. My mom was suffering from cancer and I was separated from her. I wasn't with my kids, you know, wasn't at my job, relationship-wise, wasn't going very well. So you take all that and you stir it up and it goes back to your opening of value and cost so much that you feel that stress, right? You're just feeling it every day. And so I, through therapy, through meditation, through yoga, You see, you took my opening line already. I decided to journal. And I journaled. And I wrote these stories about my life. I wrote these stories about me. I wrote these stories about growing up in Alaska and how great my father was. I wrote stories that I learned when I was 10 years old. I wrote stories about loved ones. I wrote stories about my kids. I wrote stories about society. So this book started with just journaling in 5 by 7 inch notebook every day, sometimes three different stories, where I was really writing to give my kids something so they would know about me.
Right.
I let someone read some of the stories and they said, you need to publish this because there's a lot of people out there like you. So the process begins then of publishing it. And during that time, my mom became real sick and I had to be her hospice provider because during COVID, and she had cancer, she didn't have COVID, you couldn't put her in a nursing home or a
assisted
living. So, you know, like you talked about taking care of one another, I'm damn sure going to take care of my mom. I mean, that's what you do. So I flew up to Alaska and was with her the last 8 weeks of her life, which was a blessing. It really was.
Yeah.
And I still wrote stories about that. So I found a publisher. I published 65 of about 200 stories I had. And that's kind of the answer to your question of how it started. Mm-hmm. And that's why I went into that, you know, discussion, because I wanted people to know who were kind of stressed, who had all these things going down on them, that there's a way that you can get better. And there's a way that you can get out of where you are, continue with therapy. And, you know, even someone, you know, seemingly, and I say seemingly strong like me, needed that therapy. I needed to talk to someone. I needed a friend during the time we're all confined to talk to. And this writing provided that means. And so I wrote a book called Taking the Mask Off, My Journey from Dr. Seuss to the Bible, where I chronicled 65 stories out of the 200 I wrote and published them. And it's about 4 different chapters that, you know, talk about my lessons from growing up with my dad at our little cabin, formerly a trailer that we had out there. We go to every weekend. And it talks about my Dr. Seuss moments. It talked about nature. It talked about God.
Yeah.
And the theory behind the title, Taking the Mask Off, was, you know, we're all taking our COVID mask off, but I wanted us to take the mask of conformity off.
Right.
We always go into places. And I love the HR people out there. I know your audience has a lot of HR people and they know what I'm talking about. You know, especially given our color of the skin, we're always tired because we bring something different to a corporation. But then when we don't fit in, they tell us we're not fitting in. And you get this confused, you know, aura about you. And so taking the mask off and being who you are, regardless of what they say, is a lot more important for your stress and well-being. And so I started with Dr. Seuss because, you know what he says, be who you are and say what you feel, because those who mind don't matter and those who matter don't mind.
Right.
And you take that line all the way through following the Bible and church, being a Christian, and you know, the different gospels. So that's why I chose the title, and that's a little bit about the book.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. You know, you mentioned therapy twice, and it's so important for us as men to confine in a licensed therapist.
Yes.
You know, I've been taught for years just to, you know, suck it up, you know, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But when I was going through life things, divorce, you know, business losses because of that, you know, I was dealing with a lot of hiding behind the mask. You know, I'm all right, but I was struggling, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't until I went to therapy when my therapist was like, you know, seeking therapy is your superpower. It doesn't make you weak. It makes you strong, you know, and that did something for me. I was able to, you know, catapult my life in a whole different atmosphere after that, because, you know, I was like, man, I can't go talking to nobody. They're going to think I'm weak and all that stuff. I said, nah, you know, so men, if you out there and you need therapy, it's not a weakness. It's a strength to go talk to somebody. You're going to feel so empowered after that. Now, you mentioned journaling. How important is journaling? Because people don't journal. How important it is for journaling?
I never journaled in my life. I never journaled in my life. When I was in third grade, we had to write a journal every day or something like that. In fourth grade,
which,
and that's the last time I journaled. Until I started journaling during COVID, I just knew one day I had to write. And so I made it a habit of every day I got up, I would write. And I wrote about everything from the characteristics of snowflakes coming down through the sky in different shapes to how we're different like snowflakes, from, you know, what I learned, you know, talking about in the military, you do what's called pre-combat checks before you go on an operation.
Right.
You check your equipment, you get out and you listen a little bit, and how I failed to take that transition of checking myself to relationships, you know, all these different things that I wrote about. So we talk about how important it is. It is so important. I still do it. I still write about things. I still, you know, get up in the morning on a routine where I sit in silence. I then close my eyes. I try not to think. And when I start thinking, I know I'm not really meditating. So I try to go back to that, you know, meditative state you're supposed to. And I probably get about a good 30 seconds in out of 30 minutes, but that's better than nothing. And then I'll do yoga, you know, my different yoga poses I'll do. And then I'll have a cup of coffee and then I'll journal a little bit. And you know what, Terrence, I have no idea what I'm going to write. I mean, that's kind of the scary part in this whole part. You start putting a felt pen to paper, you just start writing. And you don't have to have anything on your mind, but you'd be amazed at what comes out at the end. So for me, I only speak to me, it's super important. And going back to your point on health and mental health, that superpower, I think has men, as African-American men especially, we need to treat mental health as health. It shouldn't be mental health.
Right.
You know, all of us go to the doctor every year. You know, we go get our blood checked 10 days beforehand. We get this nice printout that says, here's your labs. And by the way, I'm close to what you are in A1C, so I watch that all the time myself. And I know what it's like. And then you think you're healthy because you walk away and the doctor says, hey, well, 70% of your problem starts from your neck up, not your neck down.
Right.
And I think that instead of getting that, you know, $300 oil change in your Volvo or your BMW or your Audi, skip it. Your car will be fine. Okay.
Right.
Don't, you know, tell the manufacturer I said that, obviously.
No, that's.
But, you know, pay that money to do what you just said. Go to a certified therapist that you trust and tell them what's going on in your life.
Right.
I mean, the fact that you may have a new baby, a new family, a new house, a new job, even though all these sound like wonderful things, they'll drive you crazy. You know?
Yeah.
So get help and you know, just don't check the blood and have the guy hit your knee and check your nose. You know, go next door to the therapist who does this professionally and tell that person what's going on in your life. And when they say you're okay, well, you're okay.
You're okay. And, you know, it's so crazy, Keith, because I know some men that take better care of their cars than they do themselves.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they got the $300 oil change in their Benz, you know, and $400 tire rotation, but they're overweight, you know, and they're drinking and got all type of ED going on, you know, there's all type of stuff going on. And like, if you just pop the hood of your life, your health,
right?
You know, same way you got that hood open, that's where you need to be popping the hood on your life and see what's going on. And most guys, they don't do it unless it's something superficial connect to it, you know, unless it's something for social media or whatever, you know. And I was like, man, you really. Your health really depends on it. And like you said, you know, your health starts from the neck up.
Yeah.
And a lot of things that we're going through physically in our bodies right now really starts with our thoughts, you know, that's making us sick, making us ill. And I'm talking from experience too, because I'll go through certain situations and all of a sudden I feel like I don't want to do a workout, or I don't want to journal. It's just between my heart and my brain, like on a good day they'll connect and work in unison, but on a bad day they will not cooperate to save my life, man.
You're right. I mean, from the brain to the heart is the longest 18 answers in the world.
Oh my God.
And you know, you talked about popping a hood. Let me tell our brothers out there that I'm not here to judge you. Okay. That's the last thing I'm going to do. Okay. I love you. All right. I was you. Okay. And I had a life-changing moment that changed me, and I'd rather share that with you so you don't get to be like I was, and you can move forward, because you need to have your bends, need to have whatever you want. That's you. You know, I drive a 2011 Ford truck with a cracked windshield. Okay. That's what I drive up here, and that's me. Mm-hmm. But I was you, and I'm here for you. I'm not going to judge you. I'm going to help you if you want it. Reach out, let me know. But we need to help each other. We need to provide these lessons. That's part of the book that I have of, here's some things that I did wrong. Here's how I got back on track. Here's some questions to consider. But in no way do I ever want to judge anyone else, because, you know, everybody's different, and they're under different constraints than I am. And I just don't want them to get like I was. That's the only thing. And, you know, you talked about your situation too. I think sharing that, being vulnerable, being open, you know, look, I'm nowhere near perfect, but I do want to let you know what I did, and, you know, you do what you need with it, and I'm here for you.
Right, right. So how long did it take you to write the book?
About a year.
Yeah, the year?
Yeah, about a year. I think a year of continuous, I mean, the hard part of writing a book is knowing when to stop. Okay. Because you keep writing, right? You're like, okay, you know, and so when you work with the editors and you work with friends and you have people read it, you basically got to take the part of the book that you want to kind of showcase and bring it out, and then you leave the rest out there. But the hard part is knowing when to stop. And because even when you're going through the different sequence of editing and, you know, seeing things, there's a point you got to say, time out, I'm stopping, because you can edit it till the cows come home. And you got to just be able to have that discipline to say, I'm done. Let's put it out. And so it took about a year. And then I took off, as you read probably part of my bio, and I walked the 500-mile Camino in Spain. So I was out of the picture for that. And so when I came back, that's when we put it out on the market.
Awesome, man. You know, first of all, congratulations on the book. And then the reason why you wrote the book is to help men worldwide, you know, and bring some type of blueprint and comfort to a lot of, you know, to a lot of men who may be struggling with a lot of things. They come across your book and say, man, that's me, you know. And then you mentioned earlier about something that your kids and grandkids can have way after you're no longer here, and say, man, you know, this book, mostly when people write a book, they need to say something. They want to leave a legacy, but they also want to help transform lives in some sort of way, you know, and that's the most important thing. Like, somebody might run across your book and be like, man, I read this book, and it's like, this really changed my life, you know, and that's a great feeling. That's a beautiful feeling. So you, where are the books sold right now? Anywhere online, bookstores? Barnes and Noble?
Pretty much Amazon. I mean, if you go to Amazon, you can find the book. It's on ebook, it's paperback, it's hardback on Amazon. There are some libraries that have bought it up. I'm not sure which ones have it, to be honest with you, but I think Amazon's probably the very best way to take a look at the book and see it for yourself.
Yeah. Amazon, right? Everything's pretty much on Amazon, you know. Barnes and Nobles used to be that place, and then, you know, Amazon, everybody's on Amazon, and, you know, it's just what it is. And I think with one click, you know, you got the book, you know, it comes to your mailbox, it comes to your inbox. It's just, you know, whatever you want to do.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So that's a beautiful thing. So what's next for Keith?
A couple of things. I think I'm going to work with some companies to get them over that hump we talked about from the business side. Got some great ideas, great prospects, great people throughout the United States that I'm working with. And the thing about my business is, you know, I believe in having skin in the game. So
right.
I do what's called performance-based consulting. My revenue comes when they're successful, not from my ideas, because I think that you've got to have some belief in what they do. And truthfully, entrepreneurs and startups don't have a lot of money. So I'm in the whole thing 100% with them. I'm riding it with them. And when we're successful, we win together. If we're not successful, then we lose together. But that's the first thing. So I want to get those companies over the hump. In the area of book, I have a novel coming out called The 16th Republic, which is a novel about an attack on Alaska. And that's going through developmental editing right now. That's going to be really cool because I grew up in Alaska and I spent time in the military. So I was able to combine those and put together fictional drama kind of linked to what's going on in Ukraine right now, kind of linked to everywhere else that people will think. So that's going to be out probably December 2024 or January 2025. And the volunteering aspect, I'm going to do a lot more volunteering and flying this year, helping out everything from dogs to people getting right to different treatments. And then in the personal side, I'm looking at biking part of Europe. I'm going to bike what's called Lake Constance, about 300 miles around Austria, Switzerland, and Germany. And then I'm going to take off and walk part of the northern part of the Camino along the coast of the ocean and probably do 100 or 200 miles of that this year. Wow. And then I want to try to get to a couple countries too to tour. But that's kind of my life right now, what I like to do, what's in the plans. As you know, the old saying, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. You heard that saying?
Right.
I'm very careful how I caveat that.
Yeah.
Today is the most important day of your life. And today is kind of everything. And I want to make sure everybody understands that, you know, I'm a dreamer, but I'm also a realist that, you know, my hands in the hands of God.
Right. Well, that's a fact. You know, sometimes, you know, is you be trying to do everything on your own and you realize nothing's really going as planned. And but God laugh at it, like, yeah, I see what the plan is, you know, but I got this right here. I got this for you, you know. So how important is it for faith for you right now? You know, it could have been always a huge part of your life, but has it increased substantially over the years? Faith.
Yeah, I think faith didn't play a big part when I was growing up in the sense of being in the church. Faith played a big part in what I believed in my parents, my family, and associates around there. I had so much faith in my family, and especially my father, who World War II veteran, just a hell of a man who, you know, if you talk about someone I never want to let down, it's my dad, you know, and
right.
He's been for 20 plus years. But faith played a much bigger part in the military. I was in the Pentagon when the plane hit, watching that whole thing explode, and then going to Iraq. And then, you know, you get to an age, Terrence, where you start getting obituaries of your friends.
Right. Oh, yeah. You know,
and you and I have seen that, and all of a sudden you're like, oh my goodness. So I think the wake-up call was when I was in the hospital in Israel, being told about my health, you know, change my diet or don't worry about living too much longer. And then you start seeing what's around you. And I think I really understood that who had my life in their hands and went back to what I should have gone back to a long time ago and never strayed. And I strayed, okay? I strayed. I don't judge. I was one of those. And still I stray. I mean, really, I had to be grounded. And I think that's where faith plays a role in me. And so the answer to your question plays a big role. It plays a huge role. It plays, I mean, every morning I'm listening to prayer. Every morning I'm praying. I've gone over the Bible several times. I don't look at someone saying, if I read the Bible, well, no, you have to reread the Bible, okay?
Right. So, yeah.
Every time something different. And and I try to do that every day and listening to different ministers, different beliefs. And so it's a huge part of my life.
Yeah, it's definitely a huge part. You mentioned something about you looking at the obituary of some of your friends. I remember 25 years ago, I've seen a lot of obituaries of my friends, and it's spooky. It was spooky then. And then now when I'm seeing people who I went to school with, no longer here, and I'd be like, man, this is really crazy. But it just, everybody, you're not going to get out of this life alive, you know what I'm saying? I know that. So my whole thing is just do the best I can every day and then go past that the next day. But shoot, I might go out there and get hit by a bus. You know, you never know what.
Both of us. I mean, you're opening up talking value and cost of these people who understand that, you know, they are so valuable to many people who look up to them, and they may not know it. And right. You know, they are such role models. You know, that the people in our community who may not feel that they're loved, they are loved. And yeah, there's four or five kids looking at those people they need in their life. And, you know, take care of yourself and for nothing else for those people so you can provide guidance. Because God knows we got to take care of each other. The world isn't as calm with us as we think. And we can't be naive. I mean, I'm the guy that put a permanent camera in my vehicle. Okay. Because you know how that works. And I live in the mountains of Colorado, but we all got to look after one another. We got to believe in one another. We got to support one another. We got to help one another. We have to do that. That's our job.
And, you know, and you're doing a fantastic job because you're actually flying people back and forth for medical treatments. You know, now, are you volunteering to do that? Or is that part of the business you're doing? Because this is a major thing that you're doing. And I can imagine like a lot of people may not have the resources to go back and forth for treatment. So, you know, that in itself as being a pilot, you know, I want to say, you know, thank you for that, for helping people, man, because I was sitting here listening to you and thinking about that. I'm like, man, you know, that has to be so life changing for a lot of people, knowing that they can count on Keith Cooper to fly back and forth, you know, to help people, you know, even with organs and stuff like that, you know what I'm saying? Plasma, you know, like this is a thing. So are you volunteering? Are you just part of the business as well?
Terrence, every hour I've flown for 44 years, I've never gotten a dime out of it. So all the time that I fly is volunteer. The organization is called Angel Flight. It's a 501c3. Mm-hmm. And there are thousands of pilots throughout the United States that do what I do. And I'm one of them. But, mm-hmm. you know, the hard work is also the people on the ground. You don't have to fly. You get patients from the hospital to the airport. They take them from the airport home. There's a whole network of volunteers. I'm just one person of many who does. And I've got the best job of all. I get to fly. And kind of selfishly, I think I get more out of it. I mean, I feel kind of guilty sometimes. Like you, when you volunteer, I mean, we all feel that guilt, and I feel the same thing. But 80% of the flying I do in my plane is for volunteer efforts, and I don't receive a dime for it. And I would never charge a dime for it. Mm. So it's not part of the business at all. It's not something I do as part of the book or consulting or anything else.
Right.
It's something I've done since 2014 before I had the business that I'll continue to do until I can fly. And, you know, the biggest threat, like all of us face, is our medical, right? I mean, we got to make sure we stay healthy. And I've got pretty strict standards in the aviation realm to be able to fly because it's not my annual physical. It's the FAA physical that counts. That, you know, it's a separate beast. And they check a lot more than your blood. And so I've got to be up to my game to be up there, you know, single pilot flying, you know, X people around to make sure I'm going to be healthy.
Right. And that's first of all, this is why you're continuously blessed, because you're blessing other people. And even though it's a network of pilots, but you're playing your position. And like you said, you feel guilty being out there doing it, you know, you're having fun, you're living a dream. Like, you really don't need the money. You just, you know, you love to fly anyway.
Right. You love to fly.
Yeah. You love to fly, you know, so it's exciting, you know, cranking it up and getting it up there and landing, you know what I'm saying? It's like, that's what pilots love that, you know? Yes. And so if you're using that talent and that skill to help people, you know, have more of a fruitful life, a more a high vitality of life, or access of more life, or abundance of life, a better quality of life. That's what I was looking for. And, you know, it's like, that's a major thing, man. I salute you for that, because so many people would be like, oh, I'm going to charge you $200 a flight. You know what? You know, it's like you helping people get better, and they feel safe with you. They feel like they're going to get the treatment that they need, maybe get the prescriptions that they need. And then on top of that, imagine the loved ones who are depending on the people, you know, to get better. And they know that getting on your flight is the thing that's going to help their loved ones get healthier, you know. And so it goes deeper than, you know, everything else. It's like having, for me, it's like if I was sick and I know I need to get on your flight to go get a treatment, I'd rather come, you know, make sure I'm on your flight and I'm able to come back home to my family, you know, and seeing the looks on their face, seeing the looks on my grandkids' face, you know, knowing that, you know, granddad is home, my grandma's home. Like, that's a huge thing, man. You're doing it for your last name. Same with the book. You're doing it for your last name versus your first name, and you're leaving a legacy, man. So I want to say thank you for that. And, you know, thank you for everything. Thank you for your service, man. You did so much for the country. You know, I couldn't imagine what you was going through during the Pentagon days, when doing 9/11. You know, that was worldwide, obviously, but you was right in the mix of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was going to ask you, did that really change you? Well, that's pretty much a crazy question because it changed everybody. But, you know, you was in the midst of that. You know, mentally, what did it really, how did it impact you mentally? You see what I'm saying? Do you still have flashbacks? Is it PTSD?
I've never forgotten it. I mean, no one has. And you know, I was one of many thousands of people who were in that building. And ironically, the part of where the plane hit was the office area that we had occupied months before. We just moved to a different office.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I knew people who didn't make it, obviously, and people who were injured. And that was a day from hell. I mean, period. It was a day for hell for our nation. I mean, the world, but our nation went through the same thing when you can't get home for 8 hours. And my wife at the time couldn't contact me to know where I was. I decided at that point, I knew we're going to go to war. I mean, there's no doubt that we're going to go back. And I made the commitment at that point because I was thinking about getting out of the military and, you know, taking a nice cushy job in the corporate world.
Right.
And I stayed another 6 years and went to war because I didn't want my son to have to do that later. And I stayed like many others did, thousands of others stayed. And I was one of tens of thousands of people who was there in the Pentagon. I was one of tens of thousands of people who went to Iraq. But I was going to serve my country and do what I could to end the chaos so my kid at the time and kids at the time didn't have to go in and do that job. So it changed the hell out of me. You bet it did.
Yeah, I'm talking to you, and as you're talking, I'm thinking. And I'm like, man, this king, you've been through a lot. You've seen a lot, you know, you survived a lot, you know, and it's like, who are you now? You know what I'm saying? Like things really change people. You're more empathetic now. You're more sensitive to a lot of different things. Obviously you're flying people for treatments. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you really don't have to do a lot. You can just chill, you know what I mean? But that probably would be boring as well.
Terrence, service never stops. And, you know, the flying part, I appreciate the highlight, but our doctors, our lawyers, our African-American community with those skills do more than I do, okay? They help others every day pro bono. They go in the communities. They do a hell of a lot more than I do. And people who even want to work with sports, our sports figures who are working with kids in the Boys Club and Girls Club do a lot more than I do, okay?
Yeah.
So I appreciate the accolade, but there's a great structure in the African American community that I'm a dwarf compared to these great people out there now doing it every day. And they don't get paid a dime, and some of them don't have technical degrees, but whether you're a mechanic showing a kid how to fix a car, whether you're giving someone a break at the grocery store, whether you're a doctor doing pro bono, whether you're an athlete, you are making a hell of a difference in doing that. Let's go to the question of who am I now? I'm a person that recognizes who you are is not what you do. And you see it every day, right? You go up to someone, you're meeting them for coffee, you're meeting them for, you know, dinner, and they go, hey, man, what's going on? Well, who are you now? Well, you know, I'm a senior vice president here, or I'm a doctor here. Well, no, that's what you do.
Right. Okay?
Because the minute you confuse who you are with what you do, if you lose that job, then you're a nobody.
Okay? Right.
And that's not true. We're children of God. We're spiritual figures. You know, who you are is things that never leave you. Okay. You're a child of great parents. You're an African-American in this country. You are, I mean, all the things of, you ask me who I am, that's who I am. You know, I'm not a pilot. You know, I mean, we ask, you know, who am I? I'm not an author. That's what I do, you know, but I'm a child of God. I'm an African-American. You know, the things that I am will never leave me. And that's right. My belief of who I am. And it took me 50 years to figure that out. So, you know, yeah. I was always a soldier. I was always someone else. But no, that's what I did. Okay. And I think that's an important distinction.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. You know, and then so much, even though this is your interview, but you're still highlighting all other people in different professions. And I respect that. I love that, man. You know what I'm saying? Because most people, they want to just, they take all the flowers, you know, but like you said, it's like, look, man, there's so many kings and queens out here from all nationalities who are doing major things to help the world. So I love that, man, you know. So now you've done some stuff in Haiti, or
yeah.
So what are your thoughts right now, briefly, on the situation that's going on in Haiti right now? Because it's kind of like it's getting kind of spooky over there.
Well, I think it's kind of past the kind of spooky stage. I mean, it was kind of spooky when I was over there. I was part of Christian Family Ministries in 2013, 2014, and spent Thanksgiving week over there both times. I spent a week working at the Fondra Orphanage. Pretty calm. You know, there were people who you know, were carrying guns around, things like that, but they were all supportive of what we were doing because we were bettering the community. You know, Terrence, right now, it is a bloodbath. It is becoming intolerable. It's chaos. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate. The people of Haiti deserve leadership they can pick that can help them. The international community must take a stance and find a way, a safe way, without committing troops in there to help them help themselves. And I would hope that we could find a way as a nation. The great nation we are, the beacon on the hills, everyone says, and we have our own internal problems, but, you know, we're giving a lot of money to other countries. Mm-hmm. We're giving a lot of aid to other countries. Mm-hmm. We should find a way that we can finally find a way to help Haiti elect their leaders freely so they can have a government, and we need to help them be successful. It's just a responsibility we have. And I don't know the answer. I mean, I wish I did. But there have been several leaders that have gone through Haiti that have been kind of U.S. pushed and other countries pushed that haven't made it. And they keep coming and going. And the people there, when you see poverty and see it there, you really understand how lucky we are to be in the United States.
Right.
And I'm not saying we don't have poverty. I'm just saying that it's a massive worse. And I think internally, you know, to sleep at night, the United States needs to find a way to help that country.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, maybe there's not a trade embargo, what, you know what I'm saying? Maybe sometimes, you know, I don't want to talk bad about this country either, but it's so much politics involved as well. But when I was looking at the situation in Haiti right now, you know, with the gangs and how they destroyed the airports and burned down the police department, it's like it's really chaos over there. And one thing that I hate seeing within any country that may have, even the situation with Russia and Ukraine, seeing innocent civilians running for their lives, you know, taking cover, who were just collateral damage, you know, and you just be going, doing your regular little thing during the course of the day. Then all of a sudden here come bombshells, gunfire, you know, all that stuff like that. So many innocents. That's the thing that bothered me, you know, that it really hurts my heart to see so many young kids and seniors get put in harm's way because of whatever the reasons, political reason or red tape, propaganda, whatever it is. And, you know, it's hard to watch for me, right? And it's like, man, you know, what would I do? And like you said, you realize how well we have it over here. It's like, I'm not in a war zone. But years ago, I used to be in a war zone in certain neighborhoods. You know, it's the same thing. But I'm comfortable right now. But you know, people are going through it, bro. And so when I saw when you was working, doing ministry work in Haiti, I wanted to ask you about Haiti on your thoughts on that. Yeah, it's. Do you have family in Haiti? Do you have anybody over there?
No one that I know of. I mean, if you look back at our history, clearly many of us could have originated and had ancestry roots there that we don't know about. But I don't have anyone that I actually know about that's in Haiti. I mean, my heart bleeds because of what you said. Just, you know, right. There's people out there. Haiti's kind of like Gaza right now. You take a look at what's going on there with, you know, the Palestinian, innocent Palestinian people.
Right, right.
Haiti is the same way, and it's just so much we have ongoing around us. And I know our leaders have to make a choice. You know, your elected leaders in Georgia, where you are making a choice in Congress. You know, I'm very impressed with Reverend Warnock. He's just such a good diplomat, Christian person that just really sticks out to be a leader in Congress. I mean, and you know, you guys did a great job in Georgia when you elected your leader. So that's what I'd say. They've got to come up with some solutions. You know, they really do. They owe us, they owe the world some things we can do that aren't temporary, that we can help these kids. Because it, you know, that breaks my heart too.
Yeah, it's very challenging to see images. You know, every time I pick up my phone and, you know, with the smart news and all, you know, I follow a lot of things in the world, you know, and it's like, I hate to see it. Even the things with the Palestinians and the Israelis, you know, that's been going on forever. Same thing with Russia and Ukraine. That's been going on forever. And even here in Atlanta, when it first jumped off, downtown Atlanta, they had one side of the street and the other side of the street, a lot of banners up. And they had the police officers, you know, blocking things off, trying to prevent a riot. And some people be like telling the news, oh, I can just wish I can do something. And, you know, when I heard that, I said, you know what? This might be somebody who might want to play something. You know, I don't want to say the word, but put some type of that might have a boom, you know, because they're looking to help out their countrymen. And they just feel like it is the way she said it terrified me. She said, it's just what I wish I can find something to do. And she was so intense with it. I said, she may be thinking about what she can do to hurt another group. You know, you can hear it in her tonality. You see it in her face. And I was like, man, this is so they had the whole area blocked off. And it's so much going on, man, in the world. But I watched my wife and I, we watched the Shirley Chisholm story the other day on Netflix. And when she was running for the presidency, 1972, you know, I was barely 5 years old. But it was the same issues then, similar to now, you know, in politics, racism, war, you know, so many different things, man. I'm sitting there and the banter on the movie was more, we got to fight for equal rights. And during that time, we had, when you turned 18, you was able to vote. And she fought for that. And they didn't want that to happen, you know, and equal rights for women. You know, the movie is really thought provoking. I think that our Regina King did an excellent job playing Shirley Chisholm, and it just, her life was at risk, you know. She just went through it, man, you know. And it's like the same issues back then, 1972, she fought for, similar to what's going on now, you know. The point I'm trying to make is nothing really is going to change that much. It's just different players in the game, you know. And I just wish that one day, it's gotten better, but, you know, it's some of the same stuff, you know. But I don't think it's ever going to be a utopia, but it's really deep, man.
all we want to do, you know, people have the confusion that civil rights is about Black people and civil rights is about everybody. And,
right.
And that legislation helps all of us. You can't hurt an ethnic group and help one at the same time. All of us have to get better together. All of us have to realize that. And that was a great work done by Shirley Chisholm, Martin Luther King, and many others. You know, I just read something about Dr. Polly, can't remember her last name. I think she was right before Rosa Parks. She's the one who also, you know, didn't give up her seat in the bus. I thought it was Dr. Polly Murray. Dr. Polly Murray.
Look right. Her
phenomenal leader way back in the 50s, still continued her work, became a minister, I think, later on. But Dr. Polly Murray, heartbeat. My two things. First, I still have a crush on Regina King, so don't call me that. I mean, you talk about someone who I just idolize, it's Regina King.
Yeah.
God, she's just like, I mean, I don't care what she's doing. I'm going to watch Regina King. So
right.
Hope her boy is watching me right now. But the album you need to listen to, again, and your listeners do, is What's Going On, 1972 Marvin Gaye, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you listen to that album,
yeah,
it could have been written yesterday. Like,
yeah,
what's going on? You know, he talks about war, he talks about ecology, he talks about, you know, men fighting men and our community. What's mm-hmm. going on? That's an album I try to listen to once a week because it's just so relevant.
Yeah,
and Marvin Gaye had it right in 1972. You know, that album still ought to be number one because it says it all.
And you know, doing the height of Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
I listened to that song.
Yeah.
You know, it's only a few years ago. And I was saying to myself, wow, this is the same thing.
Yeah.
What's going on? And that record was just so appropriate for it. And I shared it on my social media pages.
Good.
You know, and I was like, man, it's just crazy. Anyway, man, you know. All right, man. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Keith Cooper. He is the CEO of One Core Consulting. How can everybody, give everybody the websites and your social media handles?
Pretty easy. It's myname.com, KeithLCooper.com. So nothing to remember, KeithLCooper.com. And it'll point you to my book. It'll point you to my business. It'll point you to me. The big thing is I made the website about really who I am, not what I do. The who I am is first. The what I do is kind of in the corner. But just my name, Keith L. Cooper. Don't forget the L because there's a Keith Cooper out there. But KeithLCooper.com.
And right.
Then you go jump on the website, find out about me, and contact me. Tell me your stories. Love to hear them. And I can't wait till we get together again, Terrence. It's going to be fun.
Oh, yeah, because I definitely got to get information from you because just saying I need a government contract, bro. I need it. I've been, you know, I put it on the back burner because it just frustrated me so much. My wife and I, she was trying to do it because I turned her on. She was trying to do it.
Yeah.
And they kept denying her as well, you know what I'm saying? So definitely. So ladies and gentlemen, man, you know, Mr. Keith Cooper, phenomenal king, done so much for this country, do so much on a global stage. Make sure you go to get his book too, man. You know, Taking the Mask Off, The Journey from Dr. Seuss to the Bible. It's a collection, right? And a lot of great stories on there. Go to Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, or just go to his website. I'm pretty sure that he got it for sale there. Go check him out and support, man. You know, listen, so many more stories. We got to talk a little bit more about it. It was great chatting with you. I love the fact that, you know, you was taking the time out to share your stories and information with our audience. Man, it touched me so much. I'm humbled. And also thank you once again for the service, all the medals that you've won and everything that you did for the country and everything that you're doing to help people right now. It's just an amazing opportunity to meet you and talk with you, man. You know, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Just hold on right quick. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Keith Cooper, make sure you connect with him, follow him, go get the book, find out what his story is. If you look, if you're an entrepreneur, let me say this, if you're an entrepreneur and you want to get government contracts, you know, whether it's federal, state, local, you know, such as those things, make sure you connect with him, because he can get you plugged in. Because, you know, the government contracts are very lucrative, man, you know. And you win a bid. Sometimes bids may be 3 to 5 years. Bids, man, that's big. And one thing I learned about government contracts is this: they have unlimited spending power. They got money. Okay, so you know they'll plug. And if you can get in or get on, then that's an amazing thing. It just frustrated me so much. I just like, you know what? I'm done with it. So, man, thank you so much for tuning in to the Your Best Lifestyles Health and Wellness Podcast. You know, without good health, there can be no wealth, okay? And most people, most of you guys, y'all take that for granted. But if you listen to the Steve Jobs story, you know, he had all the money in the world, but he couldn't save himself, you know. And his, some of his, if you Google some of his final words, and he was saying, you know, if he had more time, you know, he would do things different. So it doesn't matter if you're driving a $30,000 car or a $300,000 car. It's still going to get you from point A to point B. Only difference is the logo. Whether you got a $60 watch or a $60,000 watch, it's still going to tell the time, you know. And so he had to put things in perspective. You know, sometimes when I look back, I complain about, oh, I don't have that, I don't have that. But I said, look behind you, look around you, all the things that you do have. You know, it's a lot of times it's not the things that we need that's haunting us. It's the things that we want. So, you know, we want things. And you mentioned something earlier about your truck. You know, it sparked me. It's like, yeah, my truck, man, I got a broken windshield in it, you know. And the average person might be like, you need to get that windshield fixed. You'd be like, whatever. But the cool thing about it is, you know, you can get it fixed. You know, it's not a big deal for you. You know what I'm saying? It's like the windshield is not broken. It's just cracked. You know, it's like you're not over the top with it. Like, oh, I got to have shiny new things all the time that make me feel important. Like, you know, I see one thing I learned years ago with a lot of my super successful friends is that they can have a Mercedes Benz and never clean it. They just ride and get in and go. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, you don't clean it. Like, huh? They don't even think nothing about it. It's no big deal to them. It's like they don't even think about what they're going to wear during the course of the day. It's a jeans and a t-shirt. It's the same thing. So it's like, what are we talking about? They don't even care. They make so much money. Their business is a machine. It you know, just generate money. Every day is money. They just donate the money because they done did everything they can do. But they find this to have themselves the most happiest, Keith, when they're helping other people. Like, the money is nothing, right? They're not stressed about it, but they're happiest when they're helping other people with their resources. Like when the universe or God bless you with finances on that level, it's not really for you. You see what I'm saying? It's for you to bless other people who need it, you know. And so everybody who's on that level is like, when you get blessed with a huge amount of cash, it ain't for you. Right. It's for you to help people out. You know, give it away, man. You can't take it. Like Denzel said, you don't see a hearse going behind a U-Haul behind a hearse,
right?
Give it away, you know, and do something with it, man. You know, it's, you can't hog it all up. And most people I know, they got money and they're so unhappy, they're stressed. You know, even Robin Williams, he had made the whole world laugh. He didn't need the money, but he committed suicide. You know what I'm saying? So mental health is real. Well, like you said, health, you know, is real. So take care of yourself, man. You know, it's not, you don't have to be very deep with your interactions with people. Don't be over super sensitive and superficial about life, man. You know, tomorrow is not promised. Help people out as much as you possibly can. whether it's volunteering your time, money, or just doing, being a good Samaritan, do something, man. You know, and we, you know, you feel like you start to have more vitality, more gratitude about life, and your stress will be gone. You feel lighter. You feel much more at ease. You sleep better. You know, you'd be like, man, this is cool. You know, help more people as you go. So that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Terrence Hutchinson, at the Your Best Lifestyle Self and Wellness Podcast. We just want you to stay focused on your health, whether it's mental, environmental, occupational, physical, emotional, all those good things, man, because it's different components to health and wellness, okay? Not just the, I'm going to the gym and work out. Forget all that. Most people go to the gym and got a great physique, but their soul ain't right, their mind ain't right. So we implore you, man, just to stay on point. And I know that you guys are going to enjoy this show. Make sure you follow Keith Cooper and check him out. He has an amazing story. He's an amazing king. And just stay inspired and go seek therapy too if you need it. All right. Talk to you guys soon.
Your Best Lifestyles Podcast by Terrence Hutchinson. A prescription for better health through an active lifestyle. This podcast highlights lifestyle-related diseases and chronic conditions that can stop or slow down activities of daily living, ADL. Everything from human movement and performance, nutrition, joint pain, back pain, pre- and post-rehabilitation strategies, posture, flexibility, and more. Whether you're a competitive athlete or non-athlete, handicapped or disabled, we will highlight the benefits of great health and wellness every day. Become a supporter. Your Best Lifestyles Podcast, a podcast by Terrence Hutchinson. Support this amazing podcast with a monthly small subscription, your monthly contribution of $4.99. www.yourbestlifestyles.com.